So this Bible reading comes from John's Gospel, John chapter 20, and the section begins at verse 24. I invite you to follow. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name.
Well, I don't know if Oscar Wilde, the playwright, ever came to St. Albans, but if he did, I think he'd like it. Certainly how it is today. He once said this, "I have the simplest of tastes. I'm always satisfied with the best." And St. Albans has plenty of the best. In a recent edition of Monopoly, St. Albans replaced Mayfair as the most prestigious place to live in the United Kingdom. And this Monopoly board, well, it had Liverpool at Old Kent Road and Leeds at Whitechapel, so I'd say it was fairly accurate. And this evening, I want to talk to you about life. That's the subject, new life. In fact, I want to tell you that Jesus offers life. But for a place like St. Albans, can Jesus Christ really offer us anything that we haven't already got? You see, St. Albans' life is probably the best kind of life the world can offer. Is probably the best kind of life the world can offer. So if you were to come up with the top ingredients for full life, you'd probably include these, among other things perhaps, but money. Money that gives you freedom and security to pursue the lifestyle that you want. Relationships, that'll be up there as well. Love, meaningful relationships, family, friends, husband's wife. Or success as well. That sense of achievement and affirmation that others look at your life. You look at your life and you think, "I've achieved something, I've accomplished something." They would probably be the three ingredients to having a full life, or some variation on them. And I suspect that there are probably not many places on the planet where those things are more obviously apparent than St. Albans. Money, love, relationships, success. They're all here in abundance, aren't they? The Channel 4 series Location, Location, Location carried out a survey of the best and worst places to live. And St. Albans is one of their top places. This is what they said about St. Albans. 50% of the smarty pants residents have a higher education qualification. And with it comes the big bucks, with some of the country's top earners residing in the area. Their kids are clever too, with GCSE results way above the national average. And if you're tired from trekking around the markets all day, there's also a strong pub culture. St. Albans can claim one of the highest levels of pubs per square mile in the country. Interesting. We have money. Average wage in St. Albans is double the national average. In fact, it's the highest of any UK city. We have success. Education, very good. Career, best qualifications, best jobs. We have relationships, a strong family culture. And if those relationships are getting a bit tough, well, there's enough pubs for each of us to go and hide away in. If anyone is going to have full life, a satisfied life, it's going to be us, people living in St. Albans. One of the most affluent, successful cities and one of the most affluent and successful nations in the world. You see, St. Albans' life probably is the best the world can offer. So I wonder, how does it feel? How does fullness of life feel? You see, if we're honest, I think we'd have to say it's slightly disappointing. And we actually wouldn't be alone with that. Just this week, a campaign was launched called All About Happiness, a bid to cheer people up in our country. In Bristol, a city not too dissimilar to St Albans, another campaign was started called Happy City. Again, seeking to bring happiness and fullness to people's lives. You see, we have a curious problem in our country, and I suspect it's here in St Albans as well, that we are one of the most affluent and successful countries. And yet people's sense of happiness and fullness and well-being just hasn't increased with the wealth and the opportunities. So maybe more. Maybe more success, or more money, or more love and relationships would give us that fullness of life that we want. But the common testimony of those who've made it and got more is that it doesn't. Johnny Wilkinson experienced all three of those things of success and money and relationships and love in 2003 when he kicked that drop kick to win the Rugby World Cup for England. He was a national hero. He was loved by everyone. Personal success. He had the money that he could, all the money he could wanted, and he said this: "As we walked around the field in our celebratory lap of honour, I could feel my dream beginning to slip away. The brightness was already fading, and with each second that passed, so was my happiness." He could get a taste of it, a taste of the fullness of life, but it wasn't enough. And that testimony of Johnny Wilkinson is true more generally of celebrity status. Celebrities are probably those who do have as much of those things that we want as anyone could possibly want. A social commentator, Cynthia Heimel, spent a lot of time in the company of celebrities in the States, and she wrote this article in a magazine. "I pity celebrities," she writes. "The night each of them became famous, they wanted to shriek with relief. Finally, now they were adored, invincible, magic. The morning after the night each of them became famous, they wanted to take an overdose of barbiturates. All their fantasies had been realized, yet the reality was still the same. If they were miserable before, they were twice as miserable now, because that giant thing they were striving for, that fame thing that was going to make everything okay, that was going to make their lives bearable, that was going to provide them with personal fulfillment and happiness, had happened, and nothing changed. They were still the same." So what's going wrong? We seem to have the key ingredients for a full life: money, relationships, success, and yet satisfaction, full life, is still elusive. Well, here's the problem. The objects or people or ideas we are trying to build our lives upon, trying to find our lives in, well, they were never designed for that purpose. They were never designed to give us full life. Now, they're all good things. They're all wonderful things. But the weight of expectation we place on them is more than they can bear. And this is why. Those things lack substance and permanence. That is, they're not big enough, not substantial enough, and they don't last long enough. Let me explain. Success, money, and love, well, they lack substance. They're not big enough for us to find our life in. Take success. If you build your life on being successful, achieving so you get that sense of affirmation and satisfaction, then you soon discover that it isn't quite enough. The first success, promotion at work or clinching that deal, or whatever it is, it's exhilarating. You feel alive. But the feeling doesn't last. And so you have to accomplish some new success or achievement. But it's never quite the same. It's always that little bit less satisfying. You see, success in career or whatever it is, it isn't substantial enough. It gives you a taste of satisfaction in life, but it doesn't fill you. Russell Brand described a similar experience when he was talking about his success as a celebrity. He said this: "What happens is that you have the initial thrill of achievement, the same as if you'd acquired a pair of shoes that you'd long craved. And then you realise the shoes are too tight. They ain't that comfortable. I want another pair of shoes. And you realise that you need nutrition from a higher source, something more valuable. Celebrity in and of itself is utterly, utterly vacuous. It's like being presented with this most glorious meal, and then when you eat it, there's no taste, there's no succour, there's no nutrition. It's tiresome." You see, success or money or relationships or love, they're not substantial enough. They don't fill you. They don't have enough taste or succour or nutrition to give you the life that you're longing for. not substantial enough. And those things also lack permanence. That is, they don't last long enough. They're not secure. So again, success in a career is so easily robbed in a global recession. Money and property disappears in a housing crash. Love or happiness in relationships can be gone after one too many rows. And even if we can maintain those things, success, money and good relationships, they cannot outlive death. Miriam Hyman was travelling during a gap year. And as she travelled, she wrote to her parents. And in one letter she said this: "I often think about the meaning of life and have come to realise that every form of pleasure is temporary and can be gone in a matter of seconds." A few years later, on July the 7th, 2005, Miriam Hyman got on a number 30 bus in London and she was killed by a terrorist bomb outside Tavistock Square. She wrote, "Every form of pleasure is temporary and can be gone in a matter of seconds." She's right, isn't she? This pleasure, this life, the success money and relationships bring is only temporary and can be gone in a matter of seconds. It doesn't last and it cannot outlive death. You see, here is the problem with St. Albans' life. It is built on things, success, money, relationships that were never designed to give us life. They're not substantial enough and they're not permanent enough. And yet the bigger problem is this, isn't it? That St. Albans' life is probably the best this world can offer. And yet it isn't enough. It isn't enough. And so as we come towards the finishing straight, I want us to think about the new life that Jesus Christ offers. Think about new life, the best that Jesus Christ can offer. If you've got the sheet in front of you, it'd be good if you could pick it up and find the reading that Reuben gave to us earlier on. In our reading earlier, we heard this about Jesus Christ. It's right there at the very end, verse 31. I'll find the little 31, it says this: "But these are written," this is John who wrote the gospel, was saying that these miracles that he recorded, well, they were written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Believe in Jesus, John says, and you will have life in his name. Earlier in his life, Jesus Christ said this: "I have come that you may have life and have it to the full." See, Jesus Christ offers us life. And at the heart of this life that Jesus Christ offers is a relationship. It is a relationship with himself and with his Father. And the claim is this, that to know and to have Jesus Christ, well, that is to have life. It's not money, it's not success, it's not relationships, as good as those things are. It is Jesus Christ in whom we find life. Now that is some claim to make, for one person to make, isn't it? But I want us to see that Jesus Christ has both substance and permanence, so that he can fulfill that promise to give us fullness of life. So first we see that the resurrection, as we think about Easter and Jesus Christ rising again from the dead, well, the resurrection of Jesus shows us that he is God, and therefore he is big enough, he has substance to give us life. After he rose from the dead, we were reading about it earlier on, one of Jesus' disciples, Thomas, well, he hadn't seen Jesus alive again. And like most of us, he said, it's recorded down here, "Unless I see with my own eyes Jesus alive again, I won't believe it." Well, Jesus did appear to him, physical, alive, real, you could touch him. And Thomas's response: "My Lord and my God. My Lord and my God." Now, this is hard to take in, but that's the point, you see. It was hard for Thomas as well to believe that Jesus Christ had risen again from the dead. Mere men don't rise again from the dead. And so Thomas concludes the only rational thing you can, and that is that Jesus is no mere man. He is God. "My Lord and my God," he says. And because Jesus is God, that means he is substantial enough for us to build our lives upon. He's big enough to give us fullness of life. Let me just give you two ways that we see that. See, because Jesus Christ is God, he can fill our lives with a love that cannot be matched. He loves us with a divine love. You see, Jesus Christ didn't love us when we were at our best, our most beautiful, our most lovely. No, he loved us when we were at our worst. And that is the Easter story. The Easter story tells us about that. The Easter story tells us that Jesus Christ died on a cross for sinners, for people who were in rebellion against God, for people who turned away from God, for people who had rejected God. It was when we were at our worst that Jesus Christ died for us. He knew our deepest sin. He knows what makes us feel most ashamed and still chose to die for us on the cross. And if embraced, that is a love that will never grow cold, and it is a love that cannot be matched. And it is a love that transforms us. I was talking about it earlier on with Ruben was asking me some questions. When we've experienced that love, when we know that the Lord Jesus Christ loves us, that we are loved by the God who created us, well then, we know that we are accepted by God. We know that we matter. We know that we are valued. We know that we have everything we could ever want as a human being in that relationship with the God who created us. And when I know that, well then it does free me up to live my life differently. Not to use my money or my career or my relationships to serve myself. Because I have everything in the Lord Jesus Christ. But instead, I can use those things to serve others and live differently. And all that rests on the knowledge that Jesus Christ's deep love for me will never change. He loved us when we were at our worst. It is a deep love. So Jesus Christ fills us with a deep love. But the other thing to see is that because Jesus Christ is God, he can fill us with an experience of life now that cannot be matched. You see, knowing Jesus Christ will transform the way you experience life, even life now in St. Albans. Our little 17-month-old daughter, Lara, has just learned to pick up a pencil and pen. And she's using crayons. She started drawing. Well, I say drawing. It's more like kind of random squiggles and lines and things. And as I look on, she's got this little blackboard that she does it on. As I look on, well, they're nice enough. But imagine she could stand beside me and tell me what was going on in her mind when she drew those squiggles and those lines. It probably wouldn't be that profound. But imagine she could. Well, suddenly my experience of those things would be that much richer and deeper. It would have greater meaning to it. Or imagine if Monet sat by you explaining the nuances of one of his paintings. Your experience of them would be much richer and fuller. Well, Jesus Christ, it is God, the great artist behind this creation. To know him is to have the artist alongside you to explain to you the meaning of his creation. So that your experience of this world is so much richer and fuller. To explain to you so you can understand how it all fits together. Who you are and why you exist. Where things like truth and morality come from. How we should understand relationships, money and success, career and family. And how all those things should fit together. See, just as you would love to have Monet beside you as you observe one of his paintings, so Jesus Christ offers to be beside you, the great artist and creator of this world, to explain to us the world that he has made, that we can experience it with greater fullness. So the resurrection shows that Jesus is God, and therefore he is substantial enough, he's big enough for us to build our lives upon and to find fullness of life. But secondly, the resurrection, and much more briefly, the resurrection shows that Jesus Christ can outlive death, and therefore he is permanent enough, if that's a phrase, to give us life. So notice again in the passage that was read earlier how keen John, who wrote it, is. He's so keen for us to know that Jesus Christ really did die. So a couple of times we're told that our attention is drawn to the marks on Jesus' body. Thomas says this, for example, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it. And then Jesus shows Thomas the marks to prove that he really did die and he really did come alive again. You see, the love, the experience of life, the fullness of life that Jesus offers, well, it won't be lost in death. He overcame death so that if we trust in him, we too can overcome death. The life that Jesus offers continues beyond the grave. And therefore, our lives now have greater significance than we could ever imagine. Death is not the end. Trust in Jesus, and our lives continue beyond the grave. So Jesus Christ has substance and he has permanence. He's able to give us life in a way that nothing else in this world can. And just as I close to reflect on this, see, we do each have this desire for life. But it seems to be that nothing in this world can fulfill that desire. St. Albans offers the best this world can in terms of life, and yet I don't think it's enough. And maybe then, if we have this desire, we were created for something or someone out of this world. If nothing in this world can fulfill this desire for fullness and satisfying life, then maybe we were created for something or someone out of this world. Let me close with something that C.S. Lewis wrote. He said this: creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exist. A baby feels hunger where there is such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim where there is such a thing as water. Men feel sexual desire where there's such a thing as sex. If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. We have a longing for the fullness of life, and nothing in this world can satisfy it. Maybe that means we were made for a God who doesn't belong to this world, but who's out of this world.